Welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast, where business leaders come to share their advice and journeys to success with existing and emerging leaders of America. Join us as we delve into the minds of these accomplished individuals, uncovering the strategies and insights that have propelled them to the top. Whether you're an established leader or an emerging force in the business world, this podcast is your go-to source for the knowledge and inspiration needed to navigate the dynamic landscape of American business. Now, here's your host, Dylan Bloyd.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast. Thank you for listening today. Today's guest is JC Cedeno. JC is the CEO and Managing Director of Palm Era, which is an international multicultural marketing agency catering to clients in the U.S. and Latin America, with offices in 10 different countries and over 140 employees. JC is a certified public accountant, a Guinness World Record holder, and an Emmy Award winner. His unique value proposition lies in combining right and left brain activities and possesses the ability to develop actionable strategies, create compelling stories, and incorporate financial metrics that generate value. Thank you for joining us today, JC.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get going with all the valuable information that you're about to share with us, I do have to ask about this Guinness World Record that you possess.
You mean what is it? What is it about, right?
Yeah, what is the record that you hold?
So we hold the record of the most number of people coming together and singing a Christmas song online, which is about 1,500 people.
Wow.
Across 20 countries.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, thank you for sharing that. All right. So if you could please give us a brief background on yourself and how you got to where you are today.
I'm more than happy. So I actually went to undergrad school at University of Tennessee. And back then I wanted to do finance. So I got my bachelor's in business, accounting and finance. And then once I graduated, I became a certified public accountant to continue to work in finance. But I was probably fortunate that I ended up working for a media and entertainment company. This would be pretty much like HBO. In fact, they are a competitor of HBO in Latin America. So most of the finance work will include either sales and marketing and tons of content, as you can imagine. So I stayed there for a couple of years, and I said, as I develop my career, what is it that I want to do? And I said, I like the industry, I like content, and I like storytelling. So decided to go to school and got an MBA in Emory, in marketing strategy. And I think that was my first true contact with marketing, the world of marketing. I said the finance is normally two colors. It's either black or red, and you normally want to be in the black, not in the red. Okay. And then marketing, you know, you get all the shades and sizes and colors. And so I did that. And then there was this bug for wanting to do something else. And I really didn't know what it was. I ended up being that something else meant to be an entrepreneur. And I had an idea for a toy that I thought, hey, you know, I'm going to make tons of money. So went out, raised some money, left Sony, raised some money, went to China, manufactured the product, brought it back into the US. And obviously, you know, the story of that was not as pretty. Okay. And it was my first lesson in entrepreneurship. And I even say, you know, the best MBA I've ever done. And then from there, I, by coincidence in a way, ended up in the world of advertising and agencies. And here we are today.
How long after working for those other marketing companies did you realize you wanted to start Palm Era?
So it was 5 years with another agency that was actually my first true agency experience. And I was with them for about 5 years. And after that, actually, is when I said a different vision. I looked at the U.S. market. I thought there was a big opportunity for independent agencies to be acquired, specifically agencies that could serve, I call it the Americas, from the US to LATAM if needed. And that's when Palmera was launched about 7 years ago. From two people, as you mentioned, we've grown to about 140.
Wow.
Now.
Oh, that's great. So what's been your success at Palmera, and how do you differentiate from other multicultural marketing agencies?
So I think this is true. I think this is true for all, or should be true for all, most marketing agencies, but it's definitely true for us. The finance, even though that's not what I do anymore, continues to be part of the DNA. Every time we engage with a new client, this is my thinking, which is the old CFO kind of thinking. If they're going to give me a buck to do a campaign for them, they want a dollar plus something more in return, mm-hmm. right? Which is what we know as return on investment.
Right.
And we do mean it. So we keep that as a top of mind. So for most of the clients that we have, they value that we look at metrics. We say that marketing is only a tool to achieve a goal. In this case, in most cases, increasing revenue. And we want to make sure that the tools are being utilized in the best way that we can to maximize return on investment. And I think that's a conversation that not many marketing agencies are having with their clients. So I'll say that is one. The second one is within the same space. So we know, you know, look at return investment. So you could do media buy, which is normally high spend and ideally high return. You could do branding campaigns, and they're going to lead to customer retention. So, and then you could measure that. But even beyond that, there is the ability to understand the business and the business context that can go beyond marketing. So as we put out our ideas and we look at campaigns that we pitch to our clients and they said, hey, let's go ahead and implement it, we're able to bring within context. Can we do it at the point of sale? Who's the retailer? Can we do it with the salespeople? Can you do it with the existing resources that you have? And I think in most cases that will lead to success. Mm. So those two are the main two differentiating factors, in my opinion, from other agencies in the multicultural marketing in the US.
Right. Are your customers returning, or do they usually go with you guys for about a couple campaigns and then move on?
It varies, but our first client when we launched the agency continues to be a client today.
Wow.
So our retention is pretty high. We've seen clients turn over when two things happen. One, there is a change in the marketing director. You know, sometimes they have a relationship with another agency that has proven successful and they want to continue those relationships. We understand them. In some cases, it's happened to us. You know, we've worked with someone and we've been a great business partner and they want to continue to work with us. So we see that.
Right.
The second one, you know what it is? It's actually when we mutually agree with a client not to do business anymore, or actually, you know, that we've been fired as an agency, said, hey, you know, you're not delivering. In most cases, which it doesn't happen often, but it's happened in these 7 years, is when the KPIs are not clear. Hmm. That is the number one thing. When the expectations are not met, 90% of the time is because KPIs were not set properly. And that is not always on the agency side. So if, let's say some of your listeners are listening to this and they're an agency or a business, it's not always up to the agency. Mm-hmm. You know, we say these are the KPIs that we should take into account. And sometimes clients actually tell you, I understand them, but that's not always the case.
It should be something that they're working together on, right?
Ideally.
Okay. So like you mentioned, with the 140 employees and 7 years and 10 different countries, so with the rapidly growing and expanding business, has it been difficult to develop your team to align with Palmera's core values?
You know what, Dylan, I think that is the number one challenge. We don't manufacture anything. We don't create products that we are scaling and selling to other people. So we sell our brain power, right? Mm-hmm. And that comes from people. So I'll say our average employee is between 27 and 35.
Okay.
What motivates him or her has changed dramatically from 15, 20 years ago. Finding that right balance is not easy.
Right.
Finding an HR person that actually understands that is not easy.
Right.
So I have a head of HR person position open for the last probably 2 years.
Wow.
Because I haven't been able to find somebody that I think is up to par in able to motivating, retaining, and growing people.
No, I'm glad that you haven't just jumped right in and just grabbed somebody just because it makes it easier on you guys. You know, it's smart to take the time and find that right person and the right fit for your culture.
Yeah.
So what unique challenges and opportunities do you face when marketing to the Latino audiences within the United States, given the diverse subcultures and regional differences now that we're kind of getting into the business?
That's a great question. So there are 64 million Latinos in the U.S. The purchasing power, depending when you look it up, is anywhere between 2 trillion to 3 trillion.
Wow.
When you look at Latin America, as I mentioned, 20 different countries. I'm not including Spain, so throw Spain in there. The largest by far is Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you will have some cultural differences as you look at as Latinos. So some of those that are very significant will be Mexico in terms of behavior and preferences. Then I can go all the way down to Argentina. Talking about Latinos in general, you have Brazil, Puerto Rico, and then anybody in between, Colombians, Venezuelans, Chileans, everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think that's, and each person that navigates the US and have wants and needs, is you have all the mix of variables that affects them. Socioeconomics, education, gender, sexual preference, you know, orientation. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, you have language. So some of those 64 million that I mentioned, they will prefer to communicate in Spanish.
Okay.
Another segment will prefer to communicate in English or their English dominant. And then some of them in between that may be bilingual.
Gotcha.
So that in itself is a challenge. So as we segment audiences, you need to say, okay, where are they located? What is the preference on language? Which country are they coming from? Plus all the other variables. So that's one of them. And the right answer is, when do you know when to target to one specific target or another target? It will depend on the product that you're marketing.
Okay.
So target definition is very, very important, as opposed to, let's say, general market, that we may go a little bit broader when defining a target. I say in the Latino multicultural, it becomes more of niche audiences. Mm-hmm. So having the ability to identify where are those audiences and what is their behavior is key.
Gotcha. How long does it take to develop those niche markets? And when you guys start working with those businesses who are looking for those campaigns, how long does it take for you guys to really develop and know where to put those campaigns towards?
Because it will depend on the vertical that we're talking about, but because we are experienced, we tend to have a general idea. If you look at the U.S. and demographics, there are some states that are the usual suspects. So you have Southern California, Texas, right? South Florida, and I mean Miami. Mm-hmm. So there's a significant Latino population here. Then you got some of the newcomers, Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, that sometimes people don't pay attention. Then you have, you know, Chicago, so on and so forth. So we have an idea where we're going to kick off a campaign. Now, optimizing the campaign. So now once we create those audiences and we say this is the niche, it probably will take us 90 days, fine tune.
90 days?
About.
Okay. So what type of market research and data analysis are most valuable for understanding the Latino market?
If we currently have a client that we just onboarded, for this particular client, retail is very important. mass retail. So Walmart and Target specifically. So there is data, I mean, there is general data on the Latino population. They had it, you know, we reviewed it with them, but we wanted to get down to now the specific behavior, barriers and drivers for purchasing at these two retailers. So this is not unusual that we tell them, let's go ahead and build a buyer persona and understand why are they buying, when are they buying, how, which media is influencing them for the decision. Are they the ultimate decision maker? Is somebody else involved in the decision of purchasing a product? So we run surveys, and we tend to do it very close to the point of sale, wherever they transact. And then we go a little bit deeper and we have one-on-one interviews.
Okay.
If there is a company out there and they say, hey, what kind of research can we do? Other than desk research, after that, probably build up a strong buyer persona, and that should carry you over at least for a good time.
Gotcha. So how does the dynamics work at your place of business? Is it that when you guys get a customer, does one person go after it, or do you have multiple people working on different things for that campaign? Probably depends on the size of the campaign, I'm guessing, right?
Correct. But that's a great question, actually. It is, when you asked about differentiation, this may be the third one that I didn't mention. But remember that I mentioned that actually most of my background comes from corporate and working for corporations. So when I stepped into the agency world, the setup is slightly different. Agencies are normally set up by accounts.
Okay.
We decided to keep more of that corporate structure. That means verticals.
Gotcha.
So we have a group of folks that all they do is market research. And that's a business unit. Mm-hmm. And then we have other folks that do creation, and that's or ideation, and that's another group. We have one of the largest groups, they do social media because it tends to be labor intensive. Then post-production of content, you got media buying, you got event. Each of these different verticals are a business unit. Depending on the campaign, these teams will come in. So we work, we use cross-functional teams. And each of these groups will be an expert on their vertical. And that's how we guarantee that at least that we put our best foot forward when creating and executing these campaigns.
Right. Well, it sounds like the strategy is obviously working for you guys. So you guys are doing a great job. So what type of media and communication channels are most effective for reaching those audiences? And how do you choose the right mix for each campaign?
So when we were talking about the audiences, right? If there is a newcomer within the Latino market, we define as someone that moved from their country of origin. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a couple months, sometimes a couple years. They tend to be Spanish dominant. They will prefer to speak Spanish. They tend to be older in age.
Okay.
For those folks, I tell you, radio will be probably perfect. Traditional radio.
Right.
Now, it depends on the product, right? Mm-hmm. It will have to be sort of a mass product to be able to use radio. TV continues to be very good. Now, let's say now you're targeting the sons and daughters of actually those first generation, which is a second generation, I guess, within the US. Probably they're going to be English dominant, and some of the medium that you're going to use are what we know. Let's say Spotify, if we're talking about music, or Reddit, it really depend on what product we're selling. So it wouldn't be too different from general market in terms of the media. One that is not popular in the US, and I don't know if you have it, so let me ask you, do you have WhatsApp?
I don't
have it. Do you use WhatsApp?
I guess I don't use WhatsApp, but I know what it is. My wife, actually, she does use it because she communicates with her family in Mexico. So yeah, there they use it. Yes.
There you go. Just said it.
Right.
So that's actually, when we want to reach a lot of the Latino market, especially when we look at conversion campaigns, we utilize a lot of WhatsApp, which in the US general market, people go like, really?
Right.
What is it?
Yeah.
So.
So you did mention that you have a background in storytelling early on in this. So how important is storytelling in your marketing efforts, and how do you incorporate the rich culture narratives of these communities into your campaigns?
I think that's probably the most important part. And sometimes prospect clients don't really realize it. Let's say, hey, you know, let's do the media, let's do the radio. I mean, all that is fine, but truth of the matter is that either the Latino market or the general audiences, I mean, we're being bombarded with that. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, social, billboard, out of home. So how do you get the attention of those folks, right?
How do you stand out?
So how do you stand out? How do they remember you? How do they relate? So this is where cultural relevance plays a huge factor. So we in content, just because we truly love content, I mentioned that earlier, we came up with a format that is ours. That we said, we know we're going to get some brands, but we're going to fund it just because we want to do it. And you know what? Because there's a message that needs to be said. And I think a lot of stories within the Latino community that need to be elevated. So we created a series that's called Generation Search. And we actually won an Emmy with this. So it tells the story of second and third generation Americans whose parents, grandparents come from another country. And how do they embark in a search for self-discovery? In doing so, they're going to go and visit the country of ancestry of the father, the grandfather, mother, for the first time in their lives. First time. Nice.
Yeah.
Trying to understand what, you know, what is the food, the people, the music, the context, and ideally uniting with family, relatives that they never met before. So first edition, the person, his name is Joel. He was born in Washington, D.C. His mother is from Guatemala.
Okay.
Now, you go to Joel when I met him. Joel, you speak Spanish? No, I don't. Like, mucho poquito. He said three words.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you Latino? Yes, I am. I am Guatemalan. And then I said, okay, so when it comes to Guatemalan food, what do you eat? And he was actually doing this. They call them pupusas, right? But he called it tortilla, and he was actually using a product that Venezuelans use.
Oh, wow.
To make it. Somebody from Guatemala would say, no, what are you doing? Don't touch it. That's not from Guatemala. That's not how you make it. But for him, this desire, which actually goes with the millennial generation, this desire of identity, connection, belonging, extremely important. So even though you may market a product in the US and Joel would respond to general market, it could be the same message. You know, he will probably buy it no matter what. He's fully bilingual. I mean, by all accounts, he's American, right?
Right.
But the Hispanic cultural relevance is so big for him that he would have responded and remembered those storytelling or ads or videos much more if there would have been a cultural connection.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully I'm explaining myself clearly.
No, you are, but definitely.
But being able to connect on the basis of heritage, storytelling, you know, call it specific celebrations that may happen back in some of the countries in Latin America, or even utilizing Spanglish will make brands and messages stand out for sure.
Gotcha. Does your team utilize AI at all, like the ChatGPT, to help understanding those cultural areas or with storytelling?
Wow. Well, let me tell you, actually that would be a complete different podcast because there's so much to say you know, it is amazing. The true answer is no.
Okay.
And I'll just throw it in there because I'm passionate about it. This has been our experience so far. Do we use it and continue to use it? Yes, just as a means to increase productivity.
Gotcha.
But today, as you and I are speaking here, is not replacing true creativity, is not replacing the generation of insights.
Right.
Right? As of now, probably will evolve, I'm sure, and that may not be the case in the future. But today, no, we don't use it. We don't use it in the creative process. Once either we have a consumer insight, once we understand the market, we may validate a few things using AI, or we may use it to increase productivity, but no more than that.
I think that's important too, because like you said, it's evolving, you know, but at the same time, we have to be the creative mind behind it. So it's going to be a while before it gets to that point, if it even does get to that point. Now, and it's true creativeness from your team. And I'm sure that businesses appreciate that.
Completely. I mean, the best campaigns, I mean, other than whether you're using a celebrity or something else, the best campaigns that I've seen are campaigns that are founded in a very strong creative, insight rather, approach. You understand something about the target that makes them tick, that makes the entire difference.
Right. Oh, well, thank you for that. What advice would you give to current and future business leaders of America that are either looking to become leaders or better leaders within their organizations?
I'm going to tell you sort of a joke, lightly, but it came to mind, so I'm going to tell you. Don't become a leader, just follow.
Right.
I'm telling you. And the reason for that is that it really is hard work. When some of our folks within the agency, they tell us, hey, you know, one day I want to have, my own agency. And by the way, I didn't tell you, but our model, value creation, and because I came from corporate and I really wanted to become an entrepreneur, we actually have made some of our employees partners in the agency.
Oh, wow.
So there are people that they own stock in our Mexico office, Guatemala office. You know, we're going to open up the U.S. pretty soon to some of them as well, because we know that's a dream for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And when they tell me, hey, you know, I probably want to have my own agency, I tell them sometimes, really think about it, you know, because this is what's going to happen. You're going to have to pay somebody their salary and you may not get paid. Mm-hmm. And you have to be okay with that. You know, you may fall 1 month behind on your mortgage, actually 2 months, which actually happened to me when I launched this agency. We had a big project. Actually, it was for the Guinness record. Mm. For that, the song that we used was Feliz Navidad, Jose Feliciano. You're familiar, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So we have people singing little strips of that song, and that's how, you know, then we stitch them all together, and the final video lasted about 5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Of everybody singing Feliz Navidad over and over and over and over and over, right? But when that happened, we had to make a payment up front, and the client would not pay until we deliver the work. So you know what? You had to borrow money. So it's hard work. So that's the first one. Unless you have an amazing idea. And obviously, creating an agency is not groundbreaking, right? It's an agency. It's a market. It's highly competitive. Mm-hmm. So unless you have a groundbreaking idea or you have a lot of money, this is my advice. Do the work. Be ready to work long hours, because it will be your greatest asset. So that is one. The second one, understand the financials and the business. I think for many entrepreneurs, including me, it's about a dream. So you have an idea, you want to become, you want to make it a reality. And sometimes we lose track that in most cases, there is a business component. So keep that in mind. If you're a new leader and you're thinking about launching a business and you don't have a strong financial background, spend some time, you know, learning about the basics of finance. And then last but not least, whatever we do within an agency, 100%, everything that we do is produced by 140 people and AI, I guess.
Right.
People could throw in there, you know, just a tiny bit. but it's mostly people. Invest in them. And just know that also is not easy. I'd say our number three employee continues to be part of the agency today. So I think they understand the culture and they love it. And some people don't. Some people are with us 3 months and then they leave and they say, you know, I didn't like it. So invest in people, try to understand them, knowing that you're not perfect and they're not perfect either.